Well, let me welcome you back to Systematically Wild. I'm joined again by Kevin Luco. And Kevin, we're regular season's coming to an end, and unfortunately not ending on a good note.
As by the time this comes out, I think the regular season will be over, but as we're recording now, there's still about five games to be played between everybody in the organization. But yes, in the words of Frank Sinatra, the end is near.
Well, you know, it was a season that, you know, I think both of us, if we're starting with the Minnesota Wild, both of us entered in thinking there was a lot of question marks that were going to occur here as team made some trades, got, you know, Kevin Fiala went on his way, and they were depending on a guy who had a great season and goal last year, but still fairly unproven commodity. And it just didn't work out for them. And you know, and credit too, it wasn't that this team was necessarily bad. Very tough Western Conference this season. So, you know, unless you brought your at least your A minus game almost every single night, you were going to be in a lot of trouble.
And they did find themselves in a lot of trouble, especially against teams that were above them in the Western Conference standings. As I believe they, am I correct that they did not win a game against any team that's going to the playoffs?
Yeah, I think you even sent me a stat or something that they were like, 11-3 overall or something like that. You know, it was a disappointing season all the way around. And so before we dive into these games and talk, and we'll do more talking about this next week, Kevin, but what does the organization do? What direction at this point do you see them take here as they look upon two games left in the season and trying to figure out what happened here?
Well, I think the only thing they can really do is just evaluate what they saw. You know, John Hines got the job in middle of November, so I think he had enough time, enough games to really get a feel for his personnel. And then I guess during the summer, they just kind of take it from there. I thought Hines had a very good Q&A session with Michael Russo of The Athletic. If you subscribe to that, and you should, it was a very good interview from Russo and sheds light onto what Hines will be looking for in this coming off season. But I think as fans, as I would think most people that are listening to this are, you have to be patient, I think, for another year, because the cap hell with the Parisi and Suter contracts are going to be around for another season yet. And I guess if you're looking for things to look forward to, well, then you got Kuznetsov is going to be around for an entire season. Liam Ogren got off to a much better start at the NHL level than he did in the AHL. So Ogren could be a interesting guy to look at come next season. So from there, you hope that guys like Freddie Gaudreau can rebound from a horrible season. Matt Zuccarello was invisible for the last 20-some games. You just hope that a lot of guys, you hope, as much as we thought a lot of guys had career seasons in 2022-23, you hope that a lot of guys just had off seasons this season and that they can rebound, and in spite of not being able to get much help salary cap-wise, that they can make a rebound next season and take another shot at a playoff spot.
So the question you got to look at too, Kevin, is that there is a lot of
ask me any question, Rob. I'm ready for you tonight. For me, buddy.
Especially in the goaltending, it looks like there's some pretty solid goaltenders that this organization has in the pipeline. Ballstead looking like he could get a shot next season, depending on what they decide to do with Fleury and where Gustafson goes. You know, they had a couple of guys that they drafted beyond that look like they're going to be winners for this organization. So you got to feel like there's some serious help that's at least a couple of years away, I would think.
And I think you, as an organization, I think you kind of earmark that as, you know, that's, you know, not next season, but the season after. Boy, 2025, 2026. Whew, yeah, we're getting old. you got to imagine that's the year they're earmarking to try to make a serious run at least getting past the first round of the playoffs again and try to get into a positive direction as an organization. And to do that, I think you need to get that. You need to get your player pipeline filled back up again, and I think that's what they did with a couple of moves with picking up the two goaltenders within the last couple of weeks here, and then seeing if you have a real thing with Phil Gustafson. If you don't think you do and you want to pull the trigger on them, maybe you get an asset in exchange for him and go with the season of Fleury and Wahlstedt. If the fountain of youth spouts leaks, then, you know, that could be a little troublesome for Fleury, as I don't know if Wahlstedt would be a guy you'd want to have playing 60-some games. So it'll be interesting, but, you know, it won't be boring. I hope that answered the question somewhat.
It did. And you've talked to me in the past about how an organization that may not be making the playoffs will send some guys down to the AHL team because they want them to get playoff experience. And we saw that a few seasons ago for the Iowa Wild. I believe it was 2019-2020. They were doing that. But as I look at this club, I think to myself, if you're just not going to be good next season, if you really think that you're, you know, maybe you make the playoffs on some miracle kind of thing, but you're not really going to compete for a Stanley Cup, do you roll the dice with some of your younger guys and say, let's bring these guys up here and see what they can prove to us and get them a whole bunch of NHL experience in preparation for a 25-26 season?
I think you definitely have to give them a fair look. You got to know what you have asset-wise, because that dictates the direction you're going in the upcoming drafts in the next couple seasons. So at some point, you know, there's going to be enough young guys coming into the system in Iowa where maybe Iowa takes their lumps again because they'll be a young team, but I think you have to find out what you got, and then that just helps you formulate a strategy for what you're going to shoot for to help you in the future.
Well, looking back on the week, as Kevin and I were recording last week, the team had come away with a 4-0 victory over Chicago on Sunday, then went to Colorado where they lost 5-2, lost in Vegas on Friday 7-2, rebounded with a 6-2 victory against the hapless Sharks. Tonight, as Kevin and I are talking, they will begin their final road game of the season against the Los Angeles Kings. But you talked about it. The big deal for this club all season long was you got to prove you can beat the teams that you could potentially face in the playoffs. Lose to Colorado on Tuesday, lose to Vegas on Friday. Not even really in either one of those games either. So it's just clearly overmatched by the top-tier teams in this conference.
And when you hit the realization that you're not going anywhere, it's, I don't care how hard they try to tell you differently, it's just hard to get up for these games, especially against teams that do have something to play for. So, you know, neither result surprised me all that much.
Tuesday night's game, Colorado jumps out to a 2-0 lead, but Kirill Kaprizov scores his 42nd of the season, scoring on the power play. Matt Boldy adds a power play goal to end out the first period, 20 seconds left in that period to be exact, to make it 2-2. But as Colorado scoring three times in the second, including two by Nathan MacKinnon, who finishes off the hat trick to come away with the 5-2 victory. Kaprizov, 42 goals at that point, Kevin, clearly proving himself to be a superstar in this league in every way that you can possibly imagine. Unfortunately, until his team starts figuring something out, you got to figure that this guy is going to be one of those great, all, you know, kind of maybe the best player in franchise history, but really nothing to show for it when the heat of the season gets to its hottest.
Well, once again, it exhibits that there's just no secondary scoring on this team right now, and that's going to be the thing that's going to hold this team back from success until they can find some pieces to go along with Kaprizov, and you hope you have that in all these young guys in the pipeline that, you know, guys are going to start panning out and producing at the NHL level.
In Vegas on Friday, the Golden Knights scored three times in the first period, one shorthanded goal and a power play goal. Minnesota does get on the board with a power play goal in the second, but they give up a power play goal as well. Two on the night they give up. Then it is a 3-1 advantage for the Golden Knights in the third period. Ryan Hartman does score his 20th goal of the season to make it 7-2. Kind of a, you know, meaningless goal, clearly, at that particular point. But Marc-Andre Fleury with 23 saves in the game. He did give up 7 goals in that contest. And, I, you know, I didn't see much of the game, Kevin, just a little bit of it, but it didn't look like this team came with a lot of inspiration, is the word I'll use.
No, I didn't watch it either. I was at a NHL play, well, not playoff game, but may as well have been a play-in game in Austin. And I didn't pick up the game on the radio till the second period. But, yeah, there just didn't seem to be much jump in the Wild. I mean, the good news would be that Murat Kuznetsov scored his first NHL goal, so I'm sure a thrilling moment for him. And it was the NHL debut for Liam Ogren.
The team does rebound on Saturday, a 6-2 victory in San Jose. Matt Boldy scores his 28th goal of the season to make it 1-0. San Jose able to tie the score, but Declan Chisholm scores his third tally of the year with a little over 3 minutes left in the first. A Wild poured on from there. Leon Ogram scores his first of the season in the second period to make it 3-1. Kaprizov adds back-to-back goals, including another power play tally, to make it 5-1. And Marcus Johansson closed out the scoring with his 11th goal of the season. So a 6-2 victory for the club in their next-to-last home game of the season. Jesper Wallstedt comes up, played very well in that game. Kevin stops 27 shots. And I'm not going to diminish that by saying, well, it's against San Jose. You know, looked like he's had two solid games after that very difficult start, proving that if he got a chance, you know, he could be a legitimate goaltender for this club.
Well, let's face it, though. I mean, it was the only real motivation for San Jose that night was their fan appreciation night. But, you know, it was probably a confidence booster for Wallstedt to face a team that wasn't going to be as elite as a Dallas team that he had faced in February. So, you know, good for him to get a win for his confidence, and it sounds like it was his last start of the season. So, goes out on a good note, and then he'll be ready for next season, I guess.
85 points now for the season, Kevin, 38-33-9 with 2 games left. Again, Los Angeles tonight, Seattle to close out the year. They're going to finish, you know, in division-wise, and I'm going to look at this because I was looking at wild card standing, so I'll take division-wise here now. Okay, so according to the division, they will finish, it looks like probably, actually 6th is the only spot they can finish in right now. 6 points behind St. Louis, 10 points ahead of Arizona. You know, the thing I worry about when a club is not making the playoffs but was good enough to almost make the playoffs is you wind up with that 11th, 12th pick in the draft, and I wonder if there's really that far down where it's a huge impact player for this club.
Well, without being a real expert at who's out there for the draft right now, it's once again just Minnesota luck, you know, just not good enough for the playoffs, but good enough to avoid getting a potential franchise-like player. But, you know, within that, you hope that on the 12th spot to go, that the scouting department has done their job, and maybe they'll pick up someone that could contribute immediately.
Dropping down to the AHL club, as Kevin and I were recording last week, the team dropped a 4-3 game to Rockford, had fallen behind 2-0, battled back with 3 goals to take the lead, but Rockford scored twice in the final 2 minutes of that game, and it's kind of a stunner to wind up making it 4-3. That all but eliminated the team from playoff contention, but that did happen as they traveled to Manitoba on Saturday, lose 7-4. Then get a rebound victory 4-3. That was it. You know, the team was out at that point. Now battling to keep out of last place, Kevin, with 3 games left, trailing Chicago by 2 points in the standings. Now, Chicago was that team that everybody was kind of trying to figure out what this looked like when they weren't an affiliate club right now, and clearly they didn't have a great season. But you got to kind of look at this and think if you're the Wild, that, wow, you know, a franchise that we weren't really even sure really what they were going to have when they were playing is still going to finish ahead of you, and you got to be shaking your head about what happened with this club this season.
Well, does it really matter, though, in the words of Ricky Bobby said, if you ain't first, you're last?
That's very true. And this is a club, too, that you talked a lot about the big club and how they were not winning against playoff teams. And I understand in your own division, you're going to play a lot of games against division opponents. But we saw, you know, Hershey comes to town and pretty much demolished them. And just a club right now that you don't feel like they are can even compete really against the top two teams or even three teams within a division right now. This is a very tough organization in terms of what's on the ice every night, it seems like.
But they did play competitive. It seemed like they did get a little better in the last month of the season, but it was just too much ground to make in too little time. I thought they had a very, very gutty victory on Sunday afternoon, defeating Manitoba 4-3, having to withstand a furious Moose rally in the last 8 minutes. So, you know, with Iowa, I think it's going to be an interesting offseason. How many young guys come in? How many guys are they going to bring in, you know, the AHL veteran types? Who's going to be back? Is Stephen Fogarty going to be back? Has Turner Ellison shown enough to make him part of the plans for next season? It'll be interesting to see who's back, who's not back, and what they're going to look for out of this team next year if they want to try to become a contender in the AHL or just focus more on player development.
Quickly looking at the Saturday's game, team falls behind 5-0 for getting a goal late in the second period, a power play goal. Then they score three times in the third. Caden Bankier with his 12th of the year scoring on the power play. Down 6-2, the team does get two goals in the final 2 minutes of the game. Fogarty and Spacek, David Spacek scoring, and that Kevin before an empty net goal closes out the scoring. Caden Bankier, you know, when he started joining the organization this year and you talked about it, he looked like he was that guy that has some scoring touch to him. And for a guy that I believe only played, what, 50-something games? I'm going to look this up just to make sure I'm quoting an exact number here. 48 games. Okay, so a little less than what I thought. 12 goals and 10 assists. I mean, he showed that he's got some touch for the club.
It would have been interesting to see what Bankier would have done with the full season. He was injured for, I believe, the first third of the season before making his debut. But I thought, you know, he took to it right away and looked very good and became a trusted member of the Wild lineup on a team that just, frankly, was starved for scoring.
As you mentioned, Iowa takes a 4-0 lead on Sunday. Two power play goals, one by Luke Koporowski and the other by Stephen Fogarty, make it 2-0. Fogarty scored twice in that game to put him up by four. Peyton Jones was looking excellent this game, breezing through the contest. As you mentioned, the Moose, though, refused to go away, scoring three times in the span of about 12 minutes to cut the deficit to one before Iowa was able to hold on, giving up 15 shots to just two for them in the third period, but still getting that. 39-15, by the way, with the shots in that contest. Peyton Jones, though, you got to think they're going to give him a shot in this organization because, he got a shot with the AHL club a couple of times this season and proved that he can be pretty tough out there between the pipes.
I was surprised that he got both starts over the weekend, and maybe that's just, you know, a way of saying, you know, a way to reward him for really a very good season at the ECHL level. So it was nice to see him get a win for his AHL squad.
Club has two games against Grand Rapids on Wednesday and Friday to close out the home schedule, then travels to Chicago on Saturday for the final game of the year. Currently right now, Iowa is 57 points, 25, 37, and 7. They trail Chicago by 2. And Manitoba already has clinched the final playoff spot within the division. That sends us to the Iowa Heartlanders this week, Kevin, who have another, a tough week for the first couple games as they welcome Kalamazoo to town, who outscored them 11-3 through those two games, but on a having Kansas City Mavericks, the best team in the ECHL right now, came to town. And I understand Kansas City was taking a little easy on the final game for a club that had already clinched the top record, but still came over the 7-4 victory. So, you know, a lot of heart for that. I thought great way to end the season for the club.
Unfortunately, you know, with the weekend before, with the arrest of three players, that to me just felt like it was a pretty big distraction to the team. But, and I think it showed in their games in the middle of the week. But in front of a full house for the first time ever in club history, they sold out Extreme Arena. And like you said, against a KC Maverick team that's probably more worried about not getting injured than winning a game, it was a good moment for the team to get a win and send their fans out with a positive memory of the season.
Drew DeRitter with 24 saves in the game. Brendan Brawley is the backup for that contest, and I think that says a lot about Hunter Jones and his future with the club. But Ben Brinkman
Jones
with four
assists. Injured, so.
Oh, okay, Ben Brinkman with four assists in the game, Kevin. Jake Derflinger scores twice in the contest for the club. As a matter of fact, I believe that they had six guys who had 2 points in this game. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yeah, I was right. Okay. So six guys had 2 points in the contest. They do end the season, Kevin, unfortunately, in last place overall. They were holding on to that 12th spot for quite a while, but both Rapid City and Wichita jump over the top of them. So they finished 27-37-8, 62 points overall, which is the most in franchise history. But a 2-8 stretch down to close out the season, I think, has got to bring a little bit of disappointment. But you talked about the little struggles of some police problems probably also was a huge distraction and really ended the season on a sour note.
It did, but like I said, you know, they had the good moment with the full house on Saturday night and the big victory. So, you know, I think there are definitely positives to take away from the season, and we'll see what direction the club goes into for their, well, I guess, would be the fourth season next year.
Yeah.
Wow.
Absolutely. Well, Kevin, let's talk about some NHL news that is starting out with one bit of news that's going to have a huge rippling effect across all of the professional hockey world here. And that is the Arizona Coyotes looking like they're heading to Salt Lake City here. And you were talking to me about the fact that because they own the Tucson club as well, you're expecting they'll move. And then we could see, you know, I mean, Utah right there. The Grizzlies are really the Colorado Avalanche affiliate. Could they see jumping to have that ECHL club right there in town too? I mean, it'd be interesting to see what this offseason looks like or when they finally get the club moved here, what that's going to look like across the board here.
Well, you know, as of Monday, it sounds like that the owner of the Coyotes, that the Roadrunners would not – and the Roadrunner franchise would not be part of the sale. So you still have the Roadrunners playing in Tucson, but the owner wants to move them to Mullet Arena, which it sounds like there's a bunch of complications within that. And two, it makes it also a heartbreaking story that, okay, the Phoenix, Arizona area lost your NHL team. So they're going to take an AHL team away from Tucson, Arizona. Now Tucson loses a team. To me, it's not good vibes. But I don't know what the draw would be in. To me, it would be kind of rubbing it in to have the Utah, we'll call them the Mormons, the Utah Mormons AHL team playing in at Mullet Arena. Just to me, it just kind of rubs it into the fans down there that they lost the Coyotes. I would think if I were the Mormons that I would want my AHL team playing, or my AHL team to be the Utah Grizzlies, a team that draws 6,000 fans a night. They're right in, obviously right in the area, so if you needed to call guys up, they're right there. You know, that is not what the NHL is trying to do with their minor league teams, have them close to the parent clubs. To me, the logical move, if you want to keep Tucson going, drop them down to the ECHL until, and this sounds like the deal isn't for sale to Utah, is that the current Coyotes owner would get first dibs on a expansion team and put it in Phoenix if he could get an arena deal done within the next so many years. Well, if that happens, then you got Tucson operating right there, and you just bump them back up to the AHL again.
And by them adding Palm Springs as an AHL team, you know, you got great rivalry going on there if you're able to bring that back into the league. It definitely has some huge bonus to make a move like that. And, talking just about the Arizona area there, Kevin, unfortunately, it seemed like this club has been doomed. Wayne Gretzky was an owner coach for a while, and there was some kind of scandal around. I mean, I remember the details, but I'll just call it some kind of at the moment around what was something going on with his wife and some financial dealings and ownership kind of thing. And it just seemed like this club has been doomed to be in oblivion for 30 years, 25 years or something. So it's not surprising that they're moving, but for a league that's trying to prove that they're a major player in the United States market, it just looks bad whenever you have a franchise move like this. I just feel like this is sending a very bad signal about where the NHL is at.
And it was, like you said, it was just shaky ownership no matter who had the team. And even for a while, the NHL technically owned the team. But there was never a good, solid ownership group in the area. And we saw it where the Coyotes end up leaving the arena out in, I'm not even thinking right tonight. Gila River Arena out of Glendale. Yeah, Glendale is what I was trying to think of. You know, they lost their arena there, moving to a college-sized arena, and you're just sitting there with a hope and a prayer that somehow everything was just going to find a way to work itself out. And anything that could go wrong for the franchise as far as votes to get an arena built, everything went against them. So, you know, I don't blame the NHL for – NHL is just basically brokering the deal. The guy is selling the team to the NHL, and the NHL is selling it to Ryan Smith up in Utah. And I guess I don't blame the NHL because the NHL wants some clarity in this. You know, they gave the Coyotes organization plenty of time to get something done, but it was just – it was a real bad look, I think, for the NHL to year after year play in this college-sized arena drawing maybe 5,000 fans a night where, you know, they needed something done. They needed something done right away, and Ryan Smith was the guy that had the money and the plan for it. So I feel beyond awful for Coyotes fans. I went through this in 1993 when Norm Green took the North Stars away from us and moved them to Dallas. I know what it's like to lose your club because you get so mentally invested in them as a fan. It just becomes so much a part of your life, and then to just have that taken away, it's a feeling that I hope nobody out there that hasn't experienced it ever has to experience it. It's just awful. It's an empty feeling. It's a heartbreak. And, you know, I think people say, well, it's Arizona. They're not hockey people down there. Well, you know what? There is hockey people down there. And when they were playing well, they were filling the arena down there. So there are a lot of fans down there feeling a whole lot of heartbreak right now. So I hope something can get done. I hope this owner in Arizona can get his stuff together to get an arena deal made and get a team down there. If not him, I hope somebody else can step up for it because I do think Arizona is a hockey market, but you just got to have the right people running it.
You know, and I agree with you, Kevin. And I also think about this too, is that there were a lot of people going to games out there in Arizona for a team that made the playoffs like once in the last 10, 12 years. I mean, this was not a very good organization. Okay, but you had 5, 8, 10,000 people that showed on a pretty regular basis, and then those people came out for their team. You know, you can't deny the dedication of a lot of those fans for a club. One time since 2011-12, I'm looking this up right now. So one time in 12 seasons, that's a remarkably horrific product on the ice, but fans still came out for that. You know, I think you got to pat the back in here and say, hey, this people showed that they'll come for games even when this team is bad, and if they could get a good club out here, maybe they'd come out in droves.
And I feel bad because on the ice, I felt like the team is making strides. Been watching them lately. It looks like Dylan Gunther, Logan Cooley are both have both found a comfort zone in pro hockey and have played very well in the last half of the season. There is a lot of talent on this Coyotes team. You look at a Josh Stone who's only played like about a dozen games, and he has contributed. So the future is looking good for this franchise, and I just feel bad for the Coyotes fans that they're not going to see it come to fruition in front of them. Utah, I think, is very lucky. They're gonna have a team that's gonna be a very good hockey team.
Yep. And to be honest with you, Connor Ingram had wore down in about the last 5 weeks of the season, but for a while that was probably a top five goaltender. I mean, he was leading the league in shutouts and for a very mediocre team for the most part of the season. His performance and goal has been remarkable for this club. So I think that there is a lot to be hanging your hat on. I'm pretty happy about if you're a Coyote/Mormon fan, whatever they're going to be. So it's going to be unfortunate. Arizona fans got robbed at the wrong time, and now they're going to have to probably come with an expansion team 3-4 years from now and hope that that team is able to do something in 4 or 5 years, and you just never know. So it sucks to be in Phoenix, I guess, if you're a hockey fan right now.
You know, there's a saying that says absence makes the heart grow fonder, and I hope that's going to be the case with the fans in Phoenix, that once they can get a team down there and get it done the right way, that they'll fill that arena regardless, just knowing what they went through with the heartbreak of losing a team. And, you know, in today's expansion team landscape, we've seen it with Vegas and to an extent with Seattle that you might be an expansion team, but I think you can be competitive awfully quick as one. So it's not like they're going to be what we saw in Minnesota and Columbus, where you're pretty much starting from scratch with nothing and you hope you build up your draft picks and your players in the next 10 years. I think, you know, if Arizona can get a team, that they'll be competitive right away again.
And I think if you're an Arizona hockey fan, you got to feel pretty good about the likelihood of them returning a club to that city, because they're talking about still trying to put another NHL team in Atlanta. So, you know, I mean, if two times that failed there miserably, and they're still looking to try to get another team there, Phoenix is going to be on that market as well. So I would never count your city out of having an NHL team probably 3 or 4 years from now. Wouldn't be surprised at all.
Well, we saw with Gary Bettman how much he has tried to help that franchise in the last 10, 15 years. A lot of instances in which he and the NHL could have given up in that market, but they chose not to, because obviously there's something there to be had. And I know it's a very good TV market. You get a lot of people snowbirding down there in the winter. I know it's a destination road trip for a lot of hockey fans that get tired of the cold winter and want to escape down in the south, warm up and see their hockey team. So, I mean, it's like we were saying here, you know, it can be a good market, but it's got to be done the right way.
Well, Kevin, as you and I are talking tonight, Western Conference playoff positions are chosen here, at least the 8 teams that are getting in. Still some jockeying for who's going to finish first through 8 through here. But the Eastern Conference, still a couple of decisions here to figure out, and it's primarily out there with the final team in the Metropolitan Division, where the New York Islanders are holding on to third place at the moment. Still have Washington tracking them right now. The Capitals holding on to that final wild card spot, but they are tied with Detroit and Philadelphia, with Pittsburgh right on the heels of those teams. So pretty exciting final two games to the season for most of these clubs. Do the Islanders hold on to that final top three spot there in the Metropolitan Division?
Well, I guess by the time this airs, I think we'll all have the answer, but take a look at gander at the standings myself here, that I believe they can hold on. It's, you know, yeah, I mean, they're going to be in, obviously. But, yeah, as far as, yeah, they'll hold the third spot in the division for sure. But how far they're going to get, I don't know. It's, you know, your prize for finishing third place in that division is a collision with Carolina. And I don't see that working out too well for the Islanders, unless they can find something else in Semyon Varlamov that they have found as of late.
Washington, Detroit, and Philadelphia with 87 points, Pittsburgh with 86. Who gets that final spot, Kevin?
Oh, boy. I know I've been trumpeting Washington for it, and it looks like they're on the verge of beating Detroit, but I believe they have another game waiting for them on Tuesday night, but I just like the veteran presence with Washington this time of year. I just have a feeling that the Caps will hold on to that playoff spot.
Pittsburgh making it a fun race down there at the end, 7-1-2 in their last 10, but 1 point behind everybody else might be the difference in this. I actually have the fewest amount of victories as well, so that's not helping them in that case. Out here, though, in the West, Dallas at 111 points, Vancouver at 107. Seems likely that Dallas is going to grab that top spot. Hey, Kevin, you get a little pat on the back here because, you know, you've been telling me all season long this is the Western Conference team. It's going to go, going to represent in the Stanley Cup, and had a little bit of a rough patch, but then got on fire down the stretch here, and they really look like they are set for a big playoff run.
I think if you can get the Jake Ottinger that was the goalie for the Stars in the playoffs last year, I think if he can get to his playoff form last year compared to, he was a little mediocre at times this season, but boy, if you can get Ottinger cooking pretty good, I can see the Stars making a heck of a run. But, you know, for their efforts, likely they are going to be facing the defending Stanley Cup champs in the first round.
Yeah. You're looking right now, as you and I are talking here, Vegas is going to finish with the eighth best record among the eight teams that make the playoffs. Nashville's probably going to be that number seven at likely 100 points they're going to have there. Vegas could still have 100 points, a little bit of stretch, but it still could happen. Los Angeles is going to be the one team in this conference that likely, well, they still could finish with 100 points too, but I don't think they get to that mark. Edmonton with 102, Vancouver with 107. As you and I are talking, Edmonton has three games left. Winnipeg with 106, Colorado with 105, and Dallas with 111. So right now, as we're talking, Winnipeg and Colorado are going to square off in the first round of the playoffs. How do you see that going? How about that?
That's going to be a barn burner, and I think the thing you got to be worried about as a Avs fan right now is the goaltending, as they have given up a lot of goals as of late, and Winnipeg does have enough offense to exploit that. So I think it comes down to the goaltending, Hellebuck versus Georgiev, and we've seen Connor Hellebuck at his best this season. So can you shut down Nate MacKinnon? Boy, that's going to be a tough task, but I tell you, of all the first-round matchups, that is the one I'm looking forward to the most.
Six straight victories for Winnipeg, as you and I are talking. Edmonton will take on Los Angeles. who do you like in that series?
Oh boy, you know, I think I got to give the edge to Edmonton, a little more firepower, and I think the goaltending matchup's about even.
Yeah, I think that's the big thing right there, is that I got to know Stuart Skinner a little bit and liked him very much when he was playing for Wichita, but I'm not completely sold on him yet. Sorry, Stu. But Los Angeles, so I'm never a guy who's super jumping on the Cam Talbot wagon. So. As if it ended the way we are looking at, Vancouver is likely going to face Nashville in that first round. Boy, does that, I hate to see Vancouver right now. But who do you like in that?
I'm thinking Nashville. I just have a feeling on that one. You know, just not a ton of playoff experience on the Vancouver club. And, you know, Nashville's just been on some kind of a roll, and they do have a lot of veterans on the club that I believe will propel them to a first-round upset.
I'm going to go with you on that one, too. Vegas is likely going to be taking on Dallas. I believe this was a rematch of last year's Western Conference Finals. Isn't that right?
I believe so.
And so how do we like this rematch?
I think this is going to be Dallas this year. I believe Dallas will defeat the Golden Knights, but I think it's going to be 6 or 7 games in that one.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty smart pick out there. A little too early to pick the East out there at the moment. I think there are a couple things we could talk about. Florida and Toronto are, well, they still couldn't. Florida could wind up passing Boston. But let's keep it at Florida and Toronto right now. Who would you like in that series?
I am going to go with Florida on that.
I'm also looking at, I got to check out, who does Carolina and the Rangers play in their last games of the season? I got to take a look at this here. So the Rangers got Ottawa. So they should, okay, they already won that game. So they got, was that their last game of the season? Let me see here. Rangers. I think that was. So that gave them their 82nd game. Carolina has has Columbus to finish out the season. So it looks like the Rangers will hang on to the top record overall in the East. Man, I gotta be honest with you, Kevin. The Rangers kind of snuck up on me this season. Maybe they shouldn't have. But was I being too cynical of the Rangers? Do you think? I mean, is this team really everything that 112 points tells us that it is?
I think so. I've not seen many weaknesses with the club, and you know, the combination in the nets with Shesterkin and Jonathan Quick has been fantastic for them. So just a good, well-rounded hockey club.
So Carolina and New York, who do we like in that? Carolina and the Islanders.
I'd definitely be taking the Hurricanes in that.
I'm with you on that as well. It looks like the Rangers are going to wind up taking on the Capitals, Red Wings, Flyers, Penguins, whatever team comes out of that. I don't think any of those teams are a match for the Rangers right now.
No, I don't think so.
Boston, Tampa Bay. You know, that should be a very fun, because Tampa Bay stood in the way of Boston for so many years. Got over that hump a little bit last year before faltering, but is Boston able to get past Tampa Bay in that first round?
I think they will. I just like the depth of the Bruins, and I think they're going to be on a mission after getting knocked out by Florida in the first round last season.
So going the opposite way, Kevin, the bottom three teams here in the league are going to wind up being all from the West. San Jose with the last record, Chicago there in 31st, and Anaheim at 30th. So the balls favors the Sharks, but you know, you and I have been very cynical about the integrity of the NHL, let's just say, and I mean, they can't really let the Sharks have the number one pick, can they?
No, it's going to be Chicago, we all know.
It will be. I mean, that's the sad part about it is. I mean, is that San Jose clearly is the worst team that and to be honest with you, you know, you were talking about how like it would make so much sense if Utah if putting their NHL team there, if they turn the Grizzlies and the AHL club to have the advantage of having a your two top clubs right there with each other, like San Jose does with the Barracuda and the Sharks. But it doesn't work when you don't have any talent down at the AHL level, really. And I just, there's nothing about this organization that I go, wow, well, you know, at least a year or two from now, there's going to be really some firepower or some great goaltending or something. I mean, I think this organization is destined to be bad for a very long time.
Yeah, there's not that. They just can't seem to find that franchise-type player that's going to turn this club around.
How long ago was it that Joe Thornton was like a really good player and the team had, you know, and he was like a top four or five player in the NHL. I don't think you could say that about San Jose for 25 years now or something. So,
no, yeah, there's crazy. Been some good players to go through there. And you know, they weren't that far away from a Stanley Cup how many years ago. So it's just unfortunate. And you have to, you know, if you stay up late enough to watch a Sharks game, there's just a lot of empty seats out there right now. And you have to wonder, maybe the NHL is going to feel like they need to throw us off their scent a little bit. And maybe they will actually give San Jose the first pick, which sounds like it would be Macklin Celebrini, who, in my opinion, I think he needs another year in college yet. But maybe they're going to, just to show us all that it's not fixed, maybe they will throw a bone to the Sharks and give them a number one overall pick, since it's not a generational player like Connor Bedard.
Well, you know, as much as I would like to see San Jose get that shot and have that top pick, and this is a franchise that really needs.
Well, you are a Bay Area guy.
I am, yeah, I am. And being a Wichita Thunder guy, too, that, you know, that's my organization. So I really would like to see this. But another organization that I just feel is just going nowhere is Columbus. And going nowhere, since that shock of Tampa Bay 5 years ago where they swept them in the first round of the playoffs, this organization is just as mediocre as it gets. But I don't see any light in the end of the tunnel for them either. Unless they're going to dive deeply into the free agent market, there's just nothing that says Blue Jackets all the way.
No, I think they got a similar thing like Minnesota, where they've never been bad enough to get a first overall pick, but they've never been good enough to make a run at it in the playoffs. So, and that's what you get.
Very sad. I think we're going to see, looks like Ottawa, Montreal, and Columbus in the bottom of the East for a long time, and right now San Jose and Anaheim in the bottom of the West for a while there.
You know, I was at the NCAA Frozen Four over the weekend, and it seemed like any player that I would look at that was impressing me on the ice, I would look, and it just seemed to be so many guys that have their draft rights held by Montreal, so don't count out the Habs. I would give them a few years yet, but I think there's a lot of good players coming up the pipeline for Montreal.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that, because that actually led to my final question for this week, Kevin. I think we're talking about 93 was the last Stanley Cup champion for Canada. Was that the Canadiens, Patrick Roy, 93? Has there been one since?
No.
Okay.
And you would be reminded of that by any hockey fan from Canada right now.
Yes, I would be. That tells you how old I am that I remembered that. But, I mean, looking across this right now, who is the one franchise? I don't see that any of the group this year. Toronto, potentially, maybe. But I don't see anybody leaping forward to me this year. So, who winds up breaking, who do you see breaking the streak a year, two, five, whatever years from now?
Maybe Edmonton. I would go with that. Maybe if they can keep the core players around, Connor McDavid going and add a few more pieces, I think it could be the Oilers.
I think that's a good call. Kevin Lucco, thanks for joining me this week.
My pleasure, Rob.